I am glad that you haven't been part of any formal group so far, because that would have muzzled you. You wouldn't be able to come and talk as freely as you're speaking now. And I want to say to you that more than anything else, your advice is for the people of Barbados. The government of Barbados will most likely try to get a person like you so that you can be gagged. You will be part of some formal committee, and the things discussed before the committee cannot be discussed in the public domain. And as a result, you will send your information to a politician. The politician will massage that information as he or she sees fit, and the people of Barbados will not be enlightened. I suppose we are the better for the circumstances that prevail today. And as long as you have breath and we have the airwaves, we must find ways and means of helping to educate the people of this country on these matters.
And I, Mr. Ellis, would do just that. And if you are not aware, which I believe you should be, I have been given a gold crown of merit for my contribution to aviation, not only in Barbados and in the Caribbean, but worldwide, because I am one of the people who work closely with the United Nations in terms of all the security developments and things like this. And I have been given a gold crown of merit. But yet, you would think that these are the people that the government would ensure that they're...
That's the point I'm making to you. One of the challenges we face here is that we need to have people outside of government to help the people of the country to understand the issues. This is, first and foremost, a point that must be sold to the average Barbadian who is about to put their house there. The next guy who says, the government is moving the squatters, and therefore, as soon as they move out, I can move in, so they got to find a place for me too. So we got to get that person to understand the danger that they are exposed to and the implications of the country as a whole. That is why this conversation to me is so important. I can't just sit down here and rely upon a politician to go in parliament and speak about this. You and other people in this country, you are exactly the kind of person that I applaud. Not the ones who sit down and talk about the regular callers to the program who repeat themselves, say the same thing all the time, and sit down in their homes and make no contribution to national discourse and feel that they are so smug and intellectually superior. It's people like you that I applaud, and I encourage you.
I will say one other thing to you too, Mr. Ellis, and that is we have people who come in and come from overseas and develop their structures around the airport, the environs of the airport, and they violated some of the conditionalities, and they spent large sums of money to rectify, to ensure that they conform to the
but you know
I've had a guy who had to take off a complete metal roof off a big house that he bought.
Beckles,
and it is unfair to these people to be adhering to the rules, and then other people
Mr.
just come
Beckles,
and
you realize that we are effective in keeping kites from flying around the airport. You realize that we are effective in keeping drones from around the airport.
Mr. Ellis, are you aware that I am the person who wrote the policy for kite flying? Well, I am telling you, I am the person.
But we get it done. So what, we can't deal with something as big as this?
Anytime a person flies a kite around the airport, the air traffic control people can just send the police for them. Simple as that.
But if we can get that done, we can fix this?
It can't be fixed, but we have to be willing to fix it.
Wow. Thank you very much, Mr. Beckles.
The problem is the will is not necessarily there. And that is why I'm saying that sometimes we have to be forced in order to take the actions that should be taken.
All right. Thanks very much. It really has been a pleasure hearing from you today. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
Mm-hmm. I got two small points. The first one is that... garbage. I put some garbage out. I decided a gap because I live in a kind of narrow gap. And this is more than a month now that these private waste haulers passing and leaving the garbage right there on the side of the road. And I don't understand why they would be doing that.
Who's paying them?
Well, me, because I never had to pay for garbage like this before.
You know what the arrangement is with them? Because they're not picking up just average garbage, you know. They are only picking up recyclables. The other garbage that degenerates and stuff and, you know, can create a problem in terms of smell, they're not taking that. So if you're putting out normal house waste, they're not going to come for that.
So then who would the person responsible for moving this out?
The Sanitation Service Authority, as I understand it.
Because they mean for years they were doing it and I never had a problem.
Yeah, but is remember, there was a time when the former administration got into a kind of contract with them. And then people said, but how is it, why you don't spend the money buying trucks and that sort of thing? Because they felt that too much money was going into the pockets of the private waste haulers. But now we are at a point where, I mean, there may be some exceptions to that rule, but in general terms, they are looking for only the recyclable material to pick up. They're not doing normal household waste.
The thing is that the properties that are next to me got some plastic drums and got it full with the same type of garbage, and they're lifting up those and dumping them, but I don't understand where they're leaving money, but they said they do.
Well, perhaps the person might be paying for that.
Oh, wow.
That is quite possible. All right. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon, David.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yeah, I just want to make a quick intervention because you're false in your assessment. I live in St. Philip.
Yes.
And I get a pickup maybe once every 2 to 3 weeks from the private haulers, and I put normal or regular household waste. I don't.
Well, don't say that I am faulty in that regard. That may vary from waste hauler to waste hauler, but I know for sure that some are not picking up that kind of garbage.
But let me put it this way. The most popular waste hauler that picks up the garbage, they're the ones who work in my area, because I will see a regular sanitation truck maybe once every 6 weeks.
How do you see us solving this problem with more emphasis on the private waste hauler?
No. This is a good, the private waste haulers have a role to play, but this is a government problem. We need trucks. It's not an easy fix, but we need trucks. That's the only way we can solve it. You need trucks.
You need overtime. You need to pay for overtime.
No, I think it needs to be regulated as a regular essential service, which means that any day is a work day. Two off days during the week. That's, you know, it could be any day. That's how you need to tackle this. From my perspective, it doesn't need a lot of overtime, but you need trucks. If they don't have equipment to work with, then overtime become negligible. But I believe you need trucks. And you need more than the 35 trucks, because Barbados is expanding. More households are going up. So obviously a whole overhaul of the system has to be done, because the way how garbage picked up now is not how you, is not how you could pick it up in the past. You know, you have a lot of development going on all through St. Philip, all through Christchurch and St. George. So naturally you need a complete overhaul. It's not an easy fix.
Fine. Thank you very much. It's approaching 12:30. That's when we go to the latest, and then we come back to this edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Don't you go away. Good afternoon. This is a continuation of Down to Brass Tacks going until 2 o'clock today. Hello.
Good afternoon, David.
Yes, sir.
I would just like to make a small contribution in support of what Mr. Hewitt has spoken about in respect to the Rock Hall area, especially, and the Time Bottom to some extent.
What's your background in this?
I am a former aviation person. I've also been trained in law.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had...
Can you give a name? Or are you reluctant?
Yeah, my name is Winston Coppin.
Yes.
I was a former air traffic control supervisor, and I currently am an attorney at law, having left aviation some years ago. But I must support Richardson's position and contribution, and to say and to add that if we react before understanding what are the legal implications with respect to the Rock Hall and the Time Bottom. because, for instance, if an incident can happen on, with respect to one of those aircraft coming to Barbados, and it can be linked to the situation at Rock Hall at the bottom, then obviously the legal implication is far exceeds, and the cost far exceeds any relocation, any seeking to remedy the situation at Rock Hall and Ten Bottom. And I think that what has happened over the years, we've had technocrats that have given sound advice, starting from Ted Wendt, Ira Larry Hunt, right through to Sam Shoebeckers, but a lot of the advice has not been accepted. Because, and I have been privileged to be at a meeting where some with respect to air bridges, that's about 15 years ago, you know, air bridges were not, when it was positive that we should have air bridges and put the position was put, air bridges to be it was said that we don't need it. Because when people come to Barbados, they want to have the sun and sunshine, they want to enjoy that. Not understanding, and for instance, now if you were to purchase air bridges, and we have to, it is 500 or 600% more than we'd have cost at the time.
Why do we need air bridges in your judgment?
We need air bridges because, for instance, if you have just traveled 8.5 hours from Europe, United Kingdom, we've traveled 4.5 hours, for instance, from New York, or 3 hours from Miami. And you do not want to come first. And if it is raining, I remember that we have a rainy season or hurricane season from June to November. And when you don't want to be able to, you don't want to leave the comfort of an aircraft and to slide to come down could be a treacherous set of stairs, then to cross in rainy conditions into the arrival hall. You don't need that.
When you make the point here that the implications could far outweigh the costs associated with moving these people if we had a major accident caused by the presence of these houses in the areas in which they currently exist.
Correct.
Give us a sense of what kind of costs we are talking about based upon precedent elsewhere.
David, for instance, now if you look at the current situation with Boeing, it involves millions of dollars. Because, for instance, you can appreciate if a wide-body jet en route from UK comes in and is full, capacity 300-plus passengers, and something happens to that, that could be linked to the possible government of Barbados not conforming to some of the HERO standards. And it could be linked to that. Then you could understand the legal implications that it involves. Because it could be involved, the aircraft entity that is going, they are going to have to look at their interests. The respective passengers of that aircraft, in terms of looking at that interest. And then you can look at the spin-off, the negative effect that it could have on the tourist industry in Barbados.
To what extent are you in a position to say that over the years you know for a fact that government has been advised along these lines?
Well, I can say that technocrats over the years have submitted respective papers with respect to, one, the possible, and Mitch could come back and confirm that, the possible effect that an expansion or not dealing with the Rock Hall situation can have. And as there is precedent with that, government in looking, because IQO would have indicated to government of Barbados, Swiss Civil Aviation Department, that in terms of the approach from the approach from 09, which is from the West, that those people in Ten Bottom had to be moved. And there was a program in place to do that. I don't know what has happened since then. But so that in itself is evidence that, look, information has been given to government, and as a result of that information, they have started to act on it.
So the relevant question that we must ask of the former administration, in particular, over the 10 years or so, but of course, it must go before that. It goes before that, because remember, it started, my recollection is that this process started when Reginald Farley was the representative for that area.
Precisely.
So the question that we must ask both administrations is, what was the holdup? One, how far did we get in that process at Time Bottom? Because we already know what has happened at Rock Hall.
Mm-hmm.
But at Time Bottom, how much of that process was completed? And if it is incomplete, as has been told to us, what have been the hindrances? And now, what is the program for trying to deal with this particular problem, rather than putting all of our focus almost exclusively on the issue at Rock Hall? Because it is a much bigger problem based upon what we have heard here today.
There is a problem and they have implications. Remember that we are not a separate in some isolation with respect to the aviation world. The aviation world is governed by standards which the International Civil Aviation Organization set. And it has various standards, whether it is in terms of persons in the airport, the actual airport construction, the airport. So there are standards that address and speaks to the infrastructure of and complete package of aviation. And you will know governments throughout the world, irrespective of the field, they are conformed to the International Civil Aviation Organization standards.
But I must tell you, it comes across as though the political class has played fast and loose with our future in this regard. This is how it comes across. And clearly, advice has been given, but that advice has not been taken. The people of Barbados have not even been taken into their confidence on this issue. And to many people, what they've heard today will come as a major surprise. This is really alarming.
You need to make it a priority, because Barbados, when aviation, in terms of under the previous administration, for instance, I came into aviation when Prime Minister Barr was then the minister at the time, and Ted Wing was the director. Clark Hunt was the deputy. And these persons, to me, they had a passion. We did what we had to do. It was made easier because the minister himself understood the importance of aviation, not only in terms of its development, in terms of tourism, but in terms of its development, in terms of Barbados as a country. And Barbados was the leader in the Caribbean with respect of its aviation infrastructure. Over the years, I know money has always been seen as a problem, but in terms of aviation infrastructure, we have not done enough in terms of our development. And we have not done enough. We've just maybe done just the bare minimum in keeping with our standards. And I think that we need to look at it. We need to look. We've had a cadre of persons who are well-trained.
Mr. Coppin, I don't know the last day I heard a discussion in Parliament in Barbados about civil aviation. Every time they open their mouths, they only talk about tourism. And they talk about airlift. But they don't talk about these dangers.
You can't think about it unless you are informed about it. And when I say informed, I'm not saying that, as a technocrat tells you, aviation is a dynamic industry. And if you've traveled, David, if you ever go into any of the major airports, there's always some form of construction in terms of its development. And I know for a fact that if we would have taken the requisite advice, and we've taken put in place what we should have done, we can't do it 100% because obviously you can't do everything one time. But if we would have taken a stand one on Rock Hall, we've taken a stand on Time Bottom in terms of what we're doing, and do in terms of our keeping within the parameters of IQ, we would have been better off. We would not have had this issue that we are having now. And you mark my word, if we do not do something about it, and we dilly-dally on the relocation of getting those people out of those areas, and something happens, mark my word, we will not be able to pay for it.
Well, a word to the wise is sufficient. I know that in all of this, there's something called politics that plays its part, because somebody said to me just now that I raised the question of why is it that we have been able to get the kites to be averted from that particular area in the flight path. But they made this point to me that the kites don't vote. So the people in the houses have votes, and politicians need votes. And that sometimes plays a pivotal role in why some of these things have not been done. And to add insult to injury, sometimes they are not as well informed about the dangers. And I hope that this discussion today would open the eyes of many to what is required to protect the interests of Barbados as it relates to our tourism sector that we talk about so much. Tourism is not just the airlift and whether we are staying with LIAT or not. Aviation is a critical part of it. This is Down to Brass Tacks. And thank you very much, Mr. Coppin. You are on the air. Hello.
Hey, good afternoon, Dennis. How you doing?
It's David.
It's David.
Mm-hmm. What's this noise? Is it wind? Is it water?
Yeah, I'm on the road. Is it better there?
A bit better, yes.
Yes, please.
I'm listening.
Right. No, well, I was just waiting on the garbage situation that everyone is calling about and speaking as.
So this is Anderson Cherry, right?
Yes, sir. This is Cherry from Horse.
Yes.
So I just wanted to give my two cents on what do you think that can be done to help save the government money and how could we better remedy the problem in overall? Huh?
Yes.
I heard earlier this week Juan spoke about 2, 3, 4, 5 different garbage cans. I don't think that that is the right approach. However, I really think that we need to look at it from a national perspective. So, look at how much waste went into the landfill. We have about 88,000 households in Barbados, and every household will generate about four pounds of garbage a day per household. So, we're looking at about 308 tons of garbage per day that would be generated from these households, which 98% of that waste can be recycled. Now, we look at the amount of trucks that you need. I think when I look at it, and you have about 88,000 households, and you divide those numbers by 700 houses per day, you need about 15 trucks. If you have a big enough receptacle at your property, for instance, for our customers, we use a 96-gallon bin. If you have a 96-gallon bin, you only need one collection per week. A regular drum that you use, those 55-gallon drums, two of those is 110. If anyone look at their household, they're hardly able to get one full per day, per week. And if they do get it full per week, if you carry a 96-gallon bin, you really can't get it full with one household per week. So when the garbage truck income for 1 week, 2, 3 weeks, yeah, you see a lot of them quite little price. But on average, you should be able to get one of those 90, you can have a full of 96-gallon bin per week. So you have enough capacity for one collection per week. I don't think government should really look at moving to 2 and 3 collections. I think that's a waste of resources. So that's the first step. I think they should look at routing the trucks properly, giving every route a specific number of houses to pick up the waste from. That's the first step. Second, a big enough receptacle outside the house with a once-a-week collection. And that's my view on it. Now, let us look at the disposal site. A good recycling program put in place can divert that 98% of that 308 tons of household waste that go into the landfill per day. Now, we look at the economic value, the financial value that coming from the recyclables. There's not very much. I heard earlier that Mr. Bino speaking about it, about the foreign exchange and stuff. But there's not much value coming from the material, but there's much benefit coming that was derived from the cost of running the landfill, cost of Mr. Alsay of building a new landfill.
Are we supposed to go in the direction of landfills at this stage?
Well, there are many. I believe that that everyone has their view on the way to go. I will share with my view. Landfilling is the easiest way right now for these small countries. I mean, when we look at Grenada and stuff, they got mountains, so there's no quarries and stuff. When we look at St. Lucia, you know, but when we look at Barbados, you don't have mountains, so we've got digging holes, which is quarries, to find raw materials to fill our roads and develop our countries. No. So when we're looking at landfilling, I think what's supposed to be being landfilled is constructing debris.
Easier? Easier?
I'm sorry?
You're saying that it is easier, but is it?
No. I'm not recommending landfilling.
Okay.
I'm just recommending landfilling for the construction waste, which represents 50% of the waste that goes in the landfill, not for the household, for the demolition of building and construction waste and paving of roads and that, taking out the foundations and stuff. No, but when we look at the recyclable material, the benefit is more for the country, not for the recycler. The recycler is only there to help facilitate.
Look at what we are facing now with China. China has been a great place for us and other countries to send our recycled material to, and now they have taken a position. We recently had a controversy between Canada and I think it was Indonesia. No, it wasn't Indonesia. It was the place where, the Philippines, where Duterte comes from. There are other countries that are now taking a completely different attitude to the material that we are sending abroad. So, I anticipate that is going to grow. So it puts a damper on the whole idea of recycling all this material.
I'm not, Dennis. It isn't going to grow. Let us look and see why China and these countries are not taking it. Now, the U.S., who is one of the biggest culprits, moved to what we call single-stream recycling. Then they move again from single-stream recycling, where they tell you to don't separate at a source, mix all of your waste together, and bring it to this facility.
But we need a policy.
No.
Mr. Cherry, with all due respect, I know that, your position is one position, and as you said earlier...
No, Dennis, sorry. Here's the part of what I'm trying to say. So the material that was being built and sent to China was more garbage than recyclable. China will accept clean, recyclable material. More that was going to China was MSW, and then there had a 90% of the waste had to go into the landfill. So if you were sending garbage to my place, I would...
Fair enough. I take that point. Okay. But understand, therefore, that you still have a problem because that waste which China is rejecting is waste that other countries were sending abroad. And it raises the question of how Barbados is going to contend with that type of waste. Now, we had on the table under the Democratic Labour Party the concept of plasma gasification. That is an issue which apparently looms very much in the air in the context of the people who were behind that company having sold it. And there's every possibility that the people that they've sold it to are likely to come back to Barbados with some kind of proposal. But the big issue here is recycling versus doing something else with it, burning it up, doing whatever else with it, so that you don't have the problem. So from where I sit, I think there is a genuine need for the new government to tell us what its policy is going to be on this in this respect?
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
And I agree too, because it helps entrepreneurs like myself to know how to invest.
Because it is one thing to have criticized the Dems for the plasma gasification idea. But having done that, you know, the government of the day, and you have to tell us what is the answer that you are coming up with. We need to know that. Thanks,
well,
very
much. I can't speak for the government, but
I understand.
I do think that one, recycling and having the waste separated is a good way to divert waste from the landfill, and is one option. Waste to energy still has its place, but it is the size of the plant, it is the type of waste, and the benefits that was derived from it.
All right.
And that's what we need to look at very carefully.
Thank you very much for intervening in the discussion. Hello? This is Dr. Brastat.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Now, coming in after Gabby Rayplas by Anok Classic is a big task because Mr. Beckles and the gentleman after Mr. Beckles, and then Cherry. That is a hard, hard petition to come in after the trade.
Well, you got a high standard to live up to, so proceed. Okay. I'm listening.
Well, this is what I'm going to say. First of all, I have 2 points to raise, but I would like to say something about Mr. Beckles. Mr. Beckles that was on before, it will have to be two Mr. Beckles with the same voice. Because listening to you just now, Mr. Ellis, to me, you never heard him before. Are you right or wrong?
I've heard him before.
Oh, you heard him before. But what I'm saying is, Mr. Beckles, on 2 or 3 occasions, addressed persons about almost everything that he just said to you. The only new thing that I just heard was that there were 6 houses, because I never heard that before, that was arranged to move. And I don't know what year that was, because he never mentioned the year. That's something new just now. And then 156 last year, and over 300 now. I don't know if the figure's right, because people saying 2-something, 300. But the one that hit me is 156 last year. He was informed that it was 156 last year. What I'm saying is that they had a lady moderator, who some of your callers for some reason dislike, that had him on her program on 2 or 3 occasions. One time, on one occasion, he was on for about 2 hours. And he informed us and helped us with all of what you just heard. But I'll move on from there to this. Now, Ms. Ellis, there are certain callers, and I'm one, who to me, the impression is that we come to attack. And I recall those names. Auntie America, Straker Sanitary, Eki Beki Man and Alvin. But why I get annoyed is that sometimes I don't understand. Now, a couple of mornings ago, I heard you in Sajako Business. You know that program that I listen to every morning? And after the program, and I get a phone call, and I was very annoyed about the program, but I got a phone call, and the person was also annoyed. I would like you to help me, Mr. Ellis. Is Adrian Donovan qualified in water or sewage?
You know, when you live in an area, that's a qualification.
Listen to the question again, Mr. Ellis.
When a person lives in an area, that provides them with a qualification. And I'll say this to you. If anybody comes with a position that is not indeed accurate, then that position can be challenged by anyone else.
Mr. Ellis, you know how I admire you and I got you. Why I'd be annoyed with you because I know you know different. I have nothing against Mr. Donovan coming on radio or wherever and saying things on behalf of the residents and businesses of the same way of the South Coast. I have a problem when it's dealing with sewage. I believe it's time enough for VOB. It don't have to be David Ellis. If there's anything we want to know about the South Coast and what is going on, because it's still a serious case. Please go to an engineer at the water.
Alvin, I want to say something to you, because I must tell you that there are many occasions where I believe that you seek to take on the role of editorial advisor to Brass Tacks and to Starcom and stuff like that.
And the news media.
Let me say to you that when you get the opportunity to edit something or run something like that, you know, you'll be in a position to determine what you want to do and how you want to do it. I think you got to bear in mind that people who are in editorial positions have to make a judgment call as to when they believe a particular individual should be heard and should not be heard. And of course, we exercise that judgment when we talk with you on a daily basis as well. Just recognize that you need to put some confidence in us sometimes. And I'm going to tell you this. It is not that I reject everything that other people tell me. I think your development as a journalist in the country depends heavily upon listening to the people that you serve. But there are times when you have to let it come in through one ear and go through the next. I don't think that you should be spending your time trying to tell us how to do the job. This is a forum.
Mr. Ellis, I'm not doing that.
This is a forum.
Just a minute.
Listen, let me tell you. I tell you so already. I don't intend to go down a line with you in which we are back and forth on our editorial stance on anything.
No, this is not the way I told Mr. Ellis. I am saying you...
I'm listening to you for another 2 minutes on this, and then I'm gone.
No, I'm just saying this, Mr. Ellis.
Okay.
We now had three persons on the air.